Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze, and it felt a little like... Time to go. Okay, kids, back in the room.
You gotta come on, guys. This has to be like...
Good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hi guys, for the last few months, we've been asking you to send us your submissions for our upcoming book, Weird Parenting Wins. You know, all those little tricks that you use on your kids that you would never hear from an expert. And now is your last chance to get those in. We need them by Christmas. So go to weirdparentingwins.com and just fill out the form. We especially need to hear from parents of preteens and teenagers. And there are certain categories that we need extra help with. We've listed those at weirdparentingwins.com. And if you submit in any of those categories, you are way more likely to get your entry published in the actual book. Anybody can submit a weird parenting win, even if you don't have kids, even teenagers, because you can tell us a thing that your parents used on you, or you can tell us a way that you've manipulated your own parents at any age, even if you just did it yesterday. Now, if you're in any sort of group for parents, we could really use your help. I'm talking about yoga classes, music classes, book clubs, support groups. Maybe you have a support group for military parents. We'd really love to hear from you. If you are in a group like this or run a group like this, email us at hello@longestshortesttime.com with the subject weird. And I will write you back personally and tell you how you can help us collect these wins. Come on, don't you want your people to be included in this book, which is going to help parents all over the world? To sweeten the deal, I will be picking one group at random, and I will Skype in to one of your meetings. So come on, email me, hello@longestshortesttime.com with the subject weird. And everybody else, submit your wins at weirdparentingwins.com. Do it by Christmas. And thanks. A few years ago, John Murray's mom died. He was grieving, and he needed some place to put his energy, like someplace creative. John's a comedian, and he was like, I know, I'll write a sketch comedy show.
And John has, can I say this?
Yeah, go.
John has two pitches that he might want to write a comedy show about.
This is Sylvia Ozels. John brought his ideas to her.
Here we go.
One is infertility, not mm-hmm. being able to have children,
right.
And the other is his mother's funeral, which
there you
had
go.
Just happened
super
months
funny topics.
Ago.
I mean,
hilarious.
When Sylvia heard the infertility idea, she was like, that's the one. They were apprehensive about making infertility jokes, especially since at the time, Sylvia was struggling to get pregnant. But Sylvia was like, let's do it. And they started writing a script.
It's called Infertile, a sketch comedy show.
It is about our respective experiences with infertility. Girl, you make me wanna
get you pregnant. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, John and Sylvia.
I watched a video of Infertile, a sketch comedy show, and it is super funny. Not just the writing, but also physically. At one point, Sylvia's on her back on a table, casually explaining her morning routine while getting a vaginal probe.
Don't worry, it's nice and warm. This guy's been in vaginas all morning.
John spends a fair amount of time on stage with his pants off.
I was thinking of masturbating. You want me to do it in a cup or something that we can take to the doctor? You know, something we can, you know, do for the cause?
No, we're good. Just put it in an old t-shirt.
This is The Longest Shortest Time. I'm Hillary Frank. Today, John and Sylvia will tell us what it was like to take one of the most vulnerable experiences of their lives, reenact it on stage, and invite people to come and laugh at it. In Infertile, John and Sylvia play a couple that's having trouble getting pregnant. But in real life...
No, we are not a couple. We are...
We're a fake couple on stage.
I would say that Sylvia is my fake wife, and yes. I don't think my wife has a problem with me saying that at all.
I feel the same way about you, John.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I feel that I have to support two husbands.
Exactly. Yep.
John and Sylvia met about a decade ago at Upright Citizens Brigade in New York, where they performed together in a sketch comedy and improv troupe. By the time John reached out to Sylvia about writing the show, his real wife, Veronica, had already given birth to twins, Maya and Jack. But it took a long time to have those kids.
It was like a 5-year kind of process. And it's just kind of almost in a weird way, these like shattered memories because of such the tumultuous road we had.
John had heard through a mutual friend that Sylvia and her husband were struggling to get pregnant. And he wanted Sylvia to know he'd been there. He got it. But also, he thought she might be just the person to be funny with him about infertility.
Why funny?
Why funny? Well, because there just is like, there's a gallows humor to it because you can't be miserable all the time. Secondly, like, it's like the most awkward experience ever. It's like moments after moments of awkwardness. You're talking about your genitals all the time. You're talking.
We will be talking about that more.
Okay, you know, you're doing things that you're supposed to be doing in private. You know, like I'm, you know, masturbating in a room with all everyone.
We're going to get to that.
Oh man.
Hello, I'm John,
and I'm Sylvia.
The show opens with John and Sylvia together on stage. There's another couple there too. They're sitting on a bench making out super aggressively. They look young, maybe in their 20s.
Look at them. They think they have so much time.
Fools.
Pretty quickly, John and Sylvia start berating them for being in the prime of their fertility and letting it go to waste.
You two think you're so young and sexy, right? What you do is not sex, all right? This is sex.
Right now, John is mounting Sylvia on a chair. Explain what is going on there with the rolling.
How do I phrase this? So one of the things that in theory could work in terms of when you're trying to get pregnant is after sex and the man ejaculates into the woman, then the woman can sort of roll up and almost into a fetal position in order to keep the sperm up there longer. So the joke here is that I am rolling off as soon as John is completed, and that he is shouting up into my crevasse for the sperm to go away from the sound of his voice, yeah. To go up towards the uterus.
That's, yeah, the extra step that we added in. We thought the screaming would help things
just move the sperm away.
Yeah, because sperm always listen.
They always listen.
Shouting.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how they respond. Dudes, yeah. That's how they respond.
In real life, John and Sylvia started out a lot like that younger couple from this scene. They'd both always figured they'd eventually want a family, but...
I didn't really think about it, though, or think it was something I want until it was something I couldn't do.
Mm.
I didn't feel a biological clock, but then the biological clock was sort of forced upon me, and I realized, oh, this is something I want.
Right, yeah. I didn't really feel a biological clock either. My wife was like, it's time.
John was 28 when his wife told him it was time. Sylvia was 33 when she started trying.
Didn't you have a doctor tell you, like, you should have got it started on this earlier?
I went to an endocrinologist a few years before we started wanting to have a kid,
yeah.
For a different matter. And he happened to be a reproductive endocrinologist, which I didn't realize. And he, you know, he gave me his diagnosis and then he sat me down and gave me a lecture on how I needed to have a child right away. Because this guy spent his whole day like talking to women who were sobbing because they couldn't have children.
And you were like, whatever, old man.
I was so angry. It felt very intrusive and offensive.
Right.
Like, why are you telling me what to do with my body?
Because
I hadn't thought. And then, you know, a few years later, I hate to say that he was right, but he was right.
He wins.
Yeah.
He wins.
Damn you, patriarchy.
Exactly.
Doctors usually start calling it infertility after you've been trying for a year. Or as Sylvia puts it, a year after you've pulled the goalie.
Pulled the goalie. As in stop taking the pill or took out your, you know,
did you
device
know that
or whatever.
Phrase?
I did not know.
Okay,
you know,
cool.
Okay.
There
great.
You go, man.
Educating the masses in a disgusting terminology.
When John and his wife pulled the goalie, they actually did get pregnant after just a couple months.
But then we had like a series of miscarriages. We had about like 5 miscarriages, and it was 6 if you counted like a chemical pregnancy we had, which means it didn't really implant. So that's where we kind of found that was a problem. And then, so we did some exploratory after that.
Now, a diagnosis of infertility doesn't really mean anything in particular. It's basically the doctor going, well, looks like you're having trouble making a baby. It's not really an answer. It's just the start of a long, arduous process. In their show, Sylvia and John explain all of this in a video with cartoon characters, an animated test tube, and a Petri dish.
I'm Pete the Petri Dish, and I'm here to guide you through the crazy world of infertility.
With each step toward treating infertility, things get more expensive and more invasive. People often start with hormones, then IUI, or intrauterine insemination, also known as the turkey baster method.
If you had insurance, you could afford a few months of IUI.
Then comes IVF, in vitro fertilization.
And did either of you consider adoption?
Yes, I would say we both did. Mm-hmm. Is that safe to say? So yeah, we, Veronica and I looked pretty, we took some steps. We went down downtown Brooklyn. They have a big adoption convention or like expo. Each year.
Adoption Expo.
Exactly, yeah.
Sunday.
You can buy a boat there, too, which is the crazy part.
Yeah, weirdly.
So we went down to that, and we found out about, like, you know, these different classrooms are filled up about, like different countries, what their laws are. And it's, the one thing that I learned is that it's as much of a process as an IVF or anything else. And people are always like, if you can't have kids, just adopt. And it's like, well, it's not that easy. And with some countries to do that, you have to like live there a year. If IVF didn't work out, that was going to be our next journey. And that, who knows, I could have been writing a show about what it was like to adopt, because it's just as much of a thing. And it deserves more respect than the flipping comment it gets when it's brought up in conversation.
Can you each describe like your rock bottom moment with infertility?
Mm. I'll let John answer that one. He's got a really sad one.
So I guess the second miscarriage, that's where I think that it was the one where it was like, this can't be happening again. And I think that's the one I remember that my wife was on the floor crying and just kind of like uncontrollable. We had probably maybe just gotten back from the appointment or something. She just like flopped on the floor. And it was just like the extreme helplessness that I felt at that moment was pretty devastating. Like, cause she was really kind of unconsolable. So I think that was the lowest moment. And not to sound callous, but you know, that's the second one. We went through about 3 more after that. And, in a weird way, that like we were a little hardened from that kind of experience. I think really that was what broke us the most, I think, that second one.
And Sylvia, what was it like emotionally for you?
I channeled most of my frustrations into anger at the medical establishment, like having to call your insurance or the doctor's office and all those kinds of things. And I would get overwhelmed with that. And I think I was not addressing the real anger I felt at, you know, what myself, I guess, my uterus.
I think that's a common thing, is that a lot of women are like, my body is failing.
That was, yeah, I did feel like that sometimes. I felt like, why can I, this is something that comes naturally, that, you know, that people want to legislate away my right to do this, and I don't have it.
I want to play another clip from the show.
Sure.
Doctor, thanks for seeing us.
I'm going to be straight with you. It's endometriosis.
Oh, but you haven't even done an exam yet.
Who's the doctor here?
You are?
That's right. I am God. I mean, your doctor. I take my infinite powers of healing and try to fix your tiny, broken, mortal wound.
We're going to get a second opinion.
Okay.
So this scene goes on to show several different doctors giving different diagnoses, and none of these doctors seem to know what the issue is. Sylvia, did you ever find out what the culprit was?
I never did. You know, I think about this a lot, that in 2017, there's so much technology, there's so many advancements,
yeah,
and there are just so many medical issues that doctors just don't have an answer for. And one of those is often infertility. It was very frustrating that that nobody could give me a clear-cut answer.
How about you, John?
Never, no. That's probably the most frustrating thing, is that for the whole time, we were like, there was never a definitive answer why this was happening.
Well, Sylvia, you were still trying to get pregnant as you were writing this.
That is true.
What was it like to be writing jokes as you were going through it?
I didn't write so many jokes as angry screeds at first, instead of comedy sketches. And luckily, John was a few years away from that. He had his beautiful twins, and he kind of gave me a lot of perspective, which was nice. Like, we don't need 3 pages of you just ranting about the medical community or about your insurance.
Yeah, mostly on the insurance.
Mainly the insurance.
Yeah, the insurance.
That's the motivation, not the joke.
Exactly. Yes.
It was cathartic and nice. Eventually, I got to a place where I could start to see from the outside what would be funny about my situation.
I know she has great ideas on how to change the insurance program of this country, guys.
I'm running for
We had to cut out all the reams of that, but she has great solutions.
Just monologues.
Exactly. You know, there's a lot wrong with insurance, and Sylvia has ideas.
When we come back, how to win at baby showers when you're losing at the fertility game. Plus, the adventures of traveling sperm. Stay with us.
Can you say advertisements?
Advertisements.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze, and it felt a little like... Time to go. Okay, kids, back in the room.
You gotta come on, guys. This has to be like...
Good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
We're back with comedians John Murray and Sylvia Ozols. I think the thing that people don't realize who aren't going through infertility... don't realize that it's like an everyday thing.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like when you're going in to get treated with these more like medically invasive procedures.
Invasive is the right word.
It's a daily thing, right, Sylvia? Can you talk about that?
It is. It's all, for me, it was every other day. But yeah, mm-hmm. with IUI, you go in every other day to your doctor, and you basically...
Like early in the morning.
Early mm-hmm. in the morning, yeah. So it's the waiting room's full of women on their way to work. And so at 7 or 8 a.m., you're there, and you get probed, basically. They're taking a probe, which has a condom on it, and because it's been in so many women, and they replace the condom every time, and they put it inside your body. And you do that every other day for weeks, I would say, until they think you're ready to have that turkey baster put in you. I sound so flippant when I say that.
There's also, you peed on a stick every day, too, to like...
That's when if you're kind of charting your fertility on your own, there's a fertility monitor and you buy little sticks that you pee on every day and then you put into the monitor. So you end up every morning peeing on your hands a little bit and putting a stick into a monitor. And when the little smiley face pops up, that's the day then you call your husband and you have a date night. You end up scheduling sex, which is the most romantic thing
it's
that you
best.
Can do.
Yeah. The best.
Do you guys have any tips for keeping sex fun when you're going through something like this?
Oof. Wow. I like sex, so it's all good to me. I mean, I was like, this is great. Like, we're getting to do this in the afternoon. Like, you know, I'm this is just a window into me. We're finding out I'm kind of like a child when it comes to sex.
Ooh, on the couch?
Wow! Ooh,
let's do it.
You mean I get to do this again? So, that's me. All I guess is just keep a gleeful outlook, that of what you had when you were a teenager. Just remind yourself that.
Yeah. I think that in our experience, our partners were incredibly supportive of
us. The same team. That is a good thing, yeah.
Same team. Maybe give each other a high five during
exactly.
the act.
Yeah.
That's my tip.
I mean, yeah, I wish I could be like, we role played like you wouldn't believe.
So many costumes.
I was a private detective.
It was it's coming from somewhere.
Exactly.
You know, that was right? A Vegas showgirl.
Wow, too specific, right?
Yeah, too specific, John.
Oh, man.
I gotta say, I've heard a lot of people talk about infertility and what it's like to have sex when you're struggling with infertility, and I've never heard anyone sound as gleeful as John does here. And I think it's a good reminder that when you're going through something really depressing, it's important to find something to do that makes you as gleeful as this.
Wow! You mean I get to do this again?
So, props to them. You know, infertility is often thought of as a woman issue, like women trying to beat their biological clocks.
Mm-hmm.
John, how do you think your maleness came into play when dealing with infertility? You wrote in an article about becoming the cliched man who's always trying to fix the problem.
Right, yeah. For a long time in the beginning process, I so was trying to take a bullet for my wife. I just wanting to get on the phone and like yell at a doctor, like, what else can I do? What do you need me for? And he'd literally be like, looking at me like I'm crazy, being like, guy, I don't need to talk to you right now. Like the star of the show is like next to you, like, cause like everything is going to happen in her body. So let's talk to her. In the end though, it is a couple thing. There is an emotional effect on, the husband, and especially in the fact of how much it affects your wife. I mean, it's you start to be like, I just want someone to tell me there's something wrong with me. Yeah, like what other grinder can we put my sperm through to find out some deficiency with it so that like I'm the problem? And that just made me chase my tail like crazy, where it was like I wanted to fix something that couldn't be fixed. When you start communicating about that and take that kind of out of the equation, I think it's easier to work along as a couple and kind of attack it together.
Okay, so I want to play you another clip from your show about being a man going through infertility. And I should say, at this point in the scene, John is pulling his pants down.
Well, being a man and going through infertility is definitely not as trying as it is for a woman. But it does have its issues. I guess the best way to describe it is that it's really, really awkward. It all starts at the doctor, where you have to go and masturbate to porn in a sad room. Okay, all right. So, people get porn and bad rap. Say it's sexist and misogynistic, but here it is, helping me and my wife get pregnant. Oh boy, you're really not treating her well.
So through like half of that scene, John, you are like pretending to masturbate
yes.
under a sheet.
Yes, yes.
So not to get too graphic here, but what is it like to have to masturbate at the doctor's in a sad room?
Weird. an understatement. You show up at the doctor's office and this nurse comes up and she's like, let me take you to this room. And she takes you to like, for lack of a better term, a little masturbatorium. And it's kind of like it's as to you know, for those of you who might never have a peek of this, it's like a regular exam room, only they have a big lazy boy in there, and it has like the examination paper, it's over the lazy boy, and then there's like a little, like, you know, there's like a little chest of drawers from what I remember, or like maybe by the sink, where she's like, open up that drawer there, and it's got a whole bunch of magazines and DVDs, and there's this old-timey kind of 90s TVD where it's like a DVD and a TV together, and you put it in, and then you hit clicking play and go from there. The crazy thing of it is, though, is that you have to wash your hands in general when you get in. Nothing can be dirty. You have to be sterile, and then you have to masturbate into a cup. And that's got to be clean, too, because if anything's dirty, they can't use a sperm. So what they don't tell you is, like, you should get everything set up before because I got everything all ready. I was ready to watch. I had put my movie in, hit play, blah, blah, blah. And then I went to go do the masturbating part and realized I was filthy from touching a dirty DVD that everyone else has touched and had to like go with my pants back around my ankle to wash myself all over again and then walk over.
Are you in there and you're like, oh my God, how many other men have been in here doing this?
Dude. Okay. Let's that one, two. Okay. Like I said, DVDs and magazines. They're supposed to be getting into a cup, right? Those magazines were gross.
Oh.
Gross. And like, I'm going to tell you too, don't think that it's nice porn in there, everybody, where it's like, oh, the doctor's office, it's classy porn. It's like anything else on the internet out there. It's just like, but it really, I was like, man, these porn actors are helping me and my wife get pregnant right now. It's
they
like,
had no idea.
They had no idea. Like I
public service.
Exactly. I had sex in a swimming pool and someone filmed it and there's kids in the world today because of me, you know? So if you're listening in the San Fernando Valley, thank you. Porn industry, thank you very much. That's just one weird way of giving
tell
your sperm.
Me more.
Okay, here you go. All right, we have more. The other way is when we had to do IUI, they didn't have a masturbatorium. So here's what we do. I masturbate in a cup at home. My wife holds on to it in a car service and we race to the place and give them the sperm to then put in the turkey baster to put inside her.
It's only
and
viable.
You're racing because how long can the sperm?
You want to keep that sperm warm and good. Yeah,
it's
you
only
get
viable for an hour.
Hour, there you go. Only yeah, viable in
you only
for
have
an hour
to get there.
I've never traveled with a jar of sperm anywhere. So that was a new experience. So here's number three. They were like, we need you to send your sperm off to a lab. So this giant box shows up in the mail. And I'm like, oh, man, what's this? A gift? I open it up and no, it's the container to mail my sperm away. And I don't know if everyone's familiar with The Force Awakens, but it looked exactly like BB-8, the little like robot ball that rolls around.
Yeah, like a little droid type
thing. So I basically once again had to masturbate into some kind of receptacle, some kind of cup or test tube, and then put it into giant BB-8 and then mail BB-8 back off to somewhere where God knows where my sperm went so that they can come and give me results about that.
Your sperm traveled so much.
So far, dude. It's been just a journey.
Is it just boring now?
Exactly. Yeah, totally. I'm just like, I masturbate now and I'm like, where are the robots? Where's the transportation? I need at least 18 people behind a door.
You're rushing it away somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah. So I need excitement, guys. It's been very sad.
I imagine that you both had lots of friends who were having babies.
Mm.
How did you react to other friends having babies?
Well, I mean, the proper way to react would be to be mature about it and let them know how you're feeling. And then, you know, if you're in a situation that makes you uncomfortable, you can extract yourself from it. But I went the opposite way and I pulled a Sheryl Sandberg and I leaned in. So I happened to be invited to a lot of baby showers around this time because, of course, your peers are having babies. And I decided I was going to win at the baby shower and I would be the best baby shower attendee. So, you know, the little games you play at baby showers,
yeah.
I was determined to win those and I won a lot of them.
Like what?
I had a friend named Risa and she had a baby shower organized by her sister and her whole family was there. And they had a quiz about Risa, the mother-to-be. And it was just sort of like little things like, what's her favorite TV show? And somehow I won that quiz. I beat her mom and her sister and her cousins and her very, very, very close friends. And I won a Starbucks gift card, which is, you know, I don't drink coffee, but hey.
Pretty big win.
The win was big.
Nice.
And I also went to another baby shower where the game was guess what's in the baby food. They passed around baby food and you have to guess what.
You taste it?
You taste it.
I
yeah.
have not.
You've never heard of that?
That?
It was
no.
Okay. So it was great. Unsanitary, but great. So you pass around the thing, you taste it, you write down what it is.
You all share the same spoon.
You do. around.
Weird party.
But yeah, and I cheated at that game. I basically looked at everyone else's answers and I wrote them down. And that was my low point.
What you win on that one?
I didn't win.
Oh.
You know what? I cheated off the wrong people. They were all idiots.
That's too bad.
Sylvia says she was overcompensating a lot.
I found myself making terrible jokes. Like I would say I got scrambled eggs in there. And that's a terrible, it's a cliched, terrible joke. And B, it's incredibly awkward for the person you're talking to.
There's a scene like this in the show, too, where John and Sylvia are out to dinner with another couple, and suddenly John starts counting.
One miscarriage!
No, I'm sorry. What is he doing?
Two miscarriages!
People know how to console, like, when someone dies directly and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, thoughts and prayers, stuff like that, where it's like, oh, we had a miscarriage, or even we're having trouble getting pregnant. People are a little bit like, oh, like, it just kind of can, like, in my experience, like, kind of turn a room a little icy, a little cold. And it's like your own uncomfort is the thing of it, too, is
everyone's uncomfortable.
Everyone's uncomfortable. You're uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable. So that's kind of what we wanted to articulate.
In a minute, Sylvia and John's fate is decided by Jesus. Don't go away.
Oh, you have your mouth closed, don't you?
Advertisements.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze, and it felt a little like... Time to go. Okay, kids, back in the room.
You gotta come on, guys. This has to be like...
Good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
We're back. Sylvia and John say that when they did open up to people about their infertility, they'd get a lot of unsolicited advice.
You know, like, my hairdresser's sister had trouble and she got knocked up when she did. It's always acupuncture. Always the advice is acupuncture, which is great. I don't mean to knock acupuncture. It works for a lot of people. It didn't particularly work for me. And also the big advice that everyone gives you is to relax, right? Mm-hmm. And which is, it's almost like telling a woman not to be crazy a little bit. It's a little sort of like, hey, not the right thing to say.
Not at all, no.
People think, well, you know, that's the way it is. When you stop trying, your uterus will start buying, to use a phrase that John wrote for the show, which is terrible.
We didn't use that one, but it's it was, I still stand by it.
It was thrown out in revisions.
In real life and on stage, Sylvia and John's go-to coping mechanism is to laugh through the pain. But
I will say, I'm not a great actor. There is one moment in the show where we have one moment of emotional manipulation in the show, one very sincere moment where I have to convey how much I want this baby.
Okay, Dr. Spandorfer, are we...
And I remember how surprisingly easy it was to channel those emotions every time.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll let you know when we know our next step. Thanks, bye. I just want a baby.
I know. And even now, thinking about it, it kind of it brings up that emotion,
yeah,
very specifically.
So because this is audio, listeners have been hearing these clips from your show without seeing you, so they don't know something that I know because I watched it. Sylvia, do you want to tell the audience what they would have noticed if they had been able to see the clips?
Well, I was hoping they wouldn't notice, but yes. We had, during the time that we were writing the show, I became pregnant, which was lovely. And we finished writing the show, and we put it up at the theater, and we put it up about once or twice before I became so noticeably pregnant that the show would be impossible to keep going. Because I, in the video you see, I'm wearing a pretty big shirt. And I think, you know, I think it's pretty noticeable at that point.
Pretty
that
obvious.
Was the last possible show that we could have done without it being completely ridiculous that I was talking about not being able to get pregnant.
Yeah, I was
being very,
ask you that.
Like, very clearly pregnant.
What was it like to be performing that role of like the woman struggling with infertility while being pregnant?
Yes, it was completely hypocritical. It was absolutely ridiculous.
Never was I so happy yet minorly sad at the same time. Yeah. We spent like, you know, like 6 months, maybe, I don't know, more writing the show. We get it ready. We're about to put it up. Yep. And then it's like, I'm pregnant. Where I'm like, oh, great, this worked. And I was like, now we can't do this show.
But the timing's a little off, Sylvia.
Exactly. It was a little silly.
I was like, you know, like really.
And so, Sylvia, how did it work out for you? Was it intervention in
it
the end?
It was not. I ended up, it just happened through one lovely evening. Of a little wine, a little romance. Let me rephrase that. What happens to a lot of people, I think, is that you stop medical treatments and then you end up pregnant the old-fashioned way. And that's what happened to me. And actually, John's wife also became pregnant during the time we were writing the show.
Yes. And that happened naturally.
I can imagine a bunch of people listening to this just being so pissed.
Yes.
And being like, yes. What? Like, That cliche that the people say of like, well, you just had to relax. Like,
yes.
Right.
What yeah. do you
infuriating.
Have to, what
infuriating
do you have to say
true.
To that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it was a freak chance. I mean, honestly, like you're talking about two people who were like, it's never going to happen again.
Yeah. I also was a little enraged, I right. guess.
The end of Infertile plays almost like a TV game show hosted by Jesus Christ. Actually, a kind of douchey Jesus Christ. He walks out, asks the audience to take a vote.
So, by round of applause, who here thinks they should not have a baby?
One person claps.
What the fuck, man? That's fucked up. By round of applause, who here thinks that they should have a baby?
This is just a recording from one night of the show. John and Sylvia say, predictably, though, the audience always voted for the baby, night after night. But the voting part feels arbitrary and a little sadistic, like up to the whim of the universe, which is maybe how it feels in real life.
I mean, the one thing is that the ending of the show is truthful to like our life experience because it's actually what happened to us.
Yeah, we got lucky.
So we got lucky and we realized that and we appreciate that. Because it's not always everyone's outcome.
Sylvia's baby girl, Christine, is about a year and a half old. And John's twins now have a little brother named Luke, who's almost two. We know there are all sorts of outcomes to fertility struggles, and we want to hear yours. Tell us at longestshortesttime.com in the comments for this episode. That's episode 147. We'll also link to resources there for people struggling with infertility. Infertile was originally staged at the UCB Theater, where John and Sylvia still perform. In those clips, you also heard the voices of Anna Caligari, Jackie Jennings, Ben Remeka, and Matt Rubano. This podcast is produced by me, Hillary Frank, with Kristen Clark. We had production help today from Jackie Sajiko. We are edited by Peter Clowney. Our engineers are Pete Karam and Jared O'Connell. Our technical director is the Reverend John Delore. Our music is performed by hotmoms.gov and directed by Allison Leighton Brown. We get editorial support from Anne-Marie Baldonado, Antonia Akitunde, and Rekha Murthy. Don't forget to send us your weird parenting wins by Christmas. Douchey Jesus will decide whether or not your win makes it into the book. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. We will be back with new shows on January 24th. Subscribe to The Longest Shortest Time in Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or wherever you like. And make sure you are following us on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle is at Longest Shortest. Subscribe to our newsletter, too, on our website. We have some exciting developments coming. We will be telling our newsletter subscribers first. And as always, we want to hear anything surprising that you have to tell us about your parents or your kids. Right now, we're rounding up a panel of precocious teenagers to help give advice to parents of teens and preteens. If you've got a kid in the New York or LA area who you think could teach parents a thing or two, send them our way.
And if you're a teenage listener, nominate yourself. Go to longestshortesttime.com, hit the participate tab, and submit your story.
There is a new podcast coming to town. It's called Dr. Game Show. This is a family-friendly podcast where we play games submitted by listeners regardless of quality or content. We do it with our really great comedian friends, and then we take calls. Werewolf Elton John! Contestants have to sing an Elton John song while slowly transforming into a werewolf.
Can you hear the love to... Tonight, I'm a werewolf now.
Hosted by Joe Firestone and Manolo Moreno. Can I have that seat? Contestants have to persuade Manolo to give up his seat with their excuses.
Hey, yo, Manolo, I need that seat. It's your boy T-Bone.
What?
I'm gonna poop my pants, man. I gotta sit on it.
Ew. Real fun. Real chaotic. You never know what's gonna happen on Dr. Game Show on Earwolf.
Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze, and it felt a little like... Time to go! Okay, kids, back in the room.
You gotta come on, guys. This has to be like...
Good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.